I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News. It's 9:06.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and here are some of the voices from top Granite State headlines this week.
We must continue to prove the strength of our democracy by working through our challenges together, with vigor, but with constant attention to our shared purpose and vision.
What are the principles behind that framework? Private insurance, personal responsibility, use of federal dollars, not state dollars, to pay for it on a short-term basis so that we see how it works. And I think that's a reasonable approach.
Small wonder, then, that we're advised just to call it a day. Throw everything online. Substitute call centers for face-to-face interactions and award competency-based credits for college-level analogs of GED degrees, all so that our customers can enjoy everyday Walmart prices.
Prosecutors say between 2005 and March of last year, Arsenault stole thousands of dollars from the Manchester Diocese, the Catholic Medical Center, and the estate of another priest. From 2000 to 2009, Arsenault was chancellor of the diocese and its public face during its clergy sexual abuse settlement with the state.
From the top, that was Governor Maggie Hassan delivering her first State of the State address. Senate Republican Majority Leader Jeb Bradley describing a new bipartisan compromise on Medicaid expansion. UNH President Mark Huddleston talking about trends in higher education in his State of the University speech. NHPR's Josh Rogers reporting on the sentencing of former top state Catholic diocese official Edward Arsenault. And the legendary New Hampshire contra dance musician Bob McQuillan, who passed away on Tuesday at age 90. Again, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. And as we review some of the week's top stories, let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests for this week's Roundup are Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. And Jeff, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good seeing you, Laura.
Also with us, Norma Love, Statehouse reporter for the Associated Press. And Norma, busy week at the Statehouse. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Anne-Marie Timmons, longtime reporter for the Concord Monitor. And Anne-Marie, good to see you too. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, all of you, Governor Hassan delivered her State of the State address, as you all know. I know you were all watching it as we were. Norma, just give us some of the quick highlights.
Well, there were two things that really jumped out at me. One was that she yet again called for the legislature to approve gambling. She wants a casino. There was some speculation last year when the House killed a gambling bill that they would go for regulations this year. They wouldn't go for a full-fledged casino for this session. They'd wait another year. And this special task force was put together that came up not just with regulations but with a casino. Another thing that came out, jumped out at me was she praised legislators. She didn't take it on herself for a compromise. And it's only a framework at this point to get 49,000 or so people who are low income, have no insurance, or limited access to insurance, to have them through Medicaid dollars. The Senate was very careful to say this was not Medicaid expansion, through Medicaid dollars onto some kind of private insurance.
That was the big headline, really, from yesterday, Norma, wasn't it? This Medicaid expansion bipartisan compromise after a year of going around and around on this.
I think that it probably almost topped the State of the State, because we've been trying. Hassan has been wanting this. The House Democrats have been wanting this. And the Senate has insisted, the Republicans in the Senate have insisted, that there had to be a New Hampshire way of doing this that involved private insurance. And I think it's got a long way to go because in the paper today, I saw that the plan that they've kind of half modeled this after, Arkansas is having some trouble with theirs, and they have a lot more options for people to get private insurance through what they call the federal marketplace.
Instead of just one provider like we have here in New Hampshire.
Correct, Anthem.
What else jumped out for you, Jeff Feingold, from the speech? There was a lot in it.
Yeah, there was. And actually, because I'm at the New Hampshire Business Review, I was paying attention to her points she was making about business and regulations and things. And one of the interesting things was she talked about one of the main issues for businesses is the workforce that we have. And she talked about improving or enhancing education, what they call STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, you know, big buzzword. And that was really – it's interesting. As with everything else in the speech, there's not many details, but it'll be interesting to see what she has to say later on about what she actually means by that. And then there's one proposal that was kind of – another interesting one would to have the Department of Resources and Economic Development set up a program where they would partner manufacturers with schools, which would is another way of improving the workforce, educating and training the workforce. And the last thing was this gold standard, she called it, where she used the term good citizens or of companies that are good citizens that, you know, have stellar records when it comes to regulations. They would have some kind of like they have at airlines, you know, an easy boarding pass. You know, you just go right through the line instead of going through security anymore.
Or something.
You know,
right.
Something. And it's interesting. I mean, you know, like anything else with the state of state, there's no details. It's all, you know, these, you know, nice concepts. And it'll be interesting to see exactly where she's going with these.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see some of the follow-up articles that you folks do on these business proposals that you're right, Jeff, mentioned very quickly in passing. But once you start looking at it, there may be a lot more there. She also mentioned Common Core, since you mentioned education, Jeff, and very quick reference to it, but support for it, saying that the state's businesses support it.
Yeah, and that's been pretty apparent. They've been coming out every week or so. You see another organization or group coming out saying that they support Common Core, business related. It's kind of a controversial issue, I guess, in many communities. But in the business community at large, it's pretty – I think it's a pretty almost – I wouldn't say unanimous support, but it's a very widespread support for this idea because the concern is that we need to have an education system that's 21st century, and I think that's what they hope that this Common Core does bring.
Anne-Marie, one area where the governor was quite clear was when it came to marijuana legalization.
She was. She again said she does not believe we should be legalizing it. She believes it will be a bad message for the youth. She doesn't think that – what I liked in her comments about that is she said, I don't think young people who are addicted or dependent on any kind of substances should be going to prison or jail for their first offense. And she also talked about a real need to bring substance abuse treatment into the state. And I know from talking with judges in my years covering the courts, there's increasingly fewer and fewer substance abuse treatment options, you know, almost more at the county jail sometimes than the prison, which has almost nothing. And so people are not getting the help. So I think if I was going to follow this speech with a story, I'd look at the high number of deaths we've had on overdose, especially with heroin, and the lack of treatment we are giving people.
And next week on The Exchange, we're going to be looking more at the heroin epidemic in northern New England and in New Hampshire. Anne-Marie, you've also done a lot of coverage of New Hampshire's mental health system, and that got a lot of time in this speech yesterday.
It did.
As well.
It did. We saw a lot of improvements in the last budget, this existing budget. The governor called for continuation of that and some more resources, not a lot of specifics again, as my co-guest have said, but an idea that we have to treat people where they are coming for services, not make it a separate but equal system, but make it available to them in ways that they need it so they're taking advantage of it.
Another big agenda item in this speech was transportation, and certainly Transportation Commissioner Clement has been sounding the alarm bells, Norma Love, about the state of our roads and bridges. Governor Hassan paid tribute to that but didn't give any specifics on it. What did she say, Norma?
Well, she gave credit to Senator Roush, Jim Roush of Derry, who has a bill in the Senate. It would be a gas tax increase tied to the Consumer Price Index. And it would be about 4 cents, which isn't going to be enough to really make a huge dent, but it would be a start. And I think that was a political amount set by the senator, because if he set the amount going back to 1991 that we needed from inflation, it wouldn't pass. I don't know that it'll pass the Senate anyway. Afterwards, we heard from Senate Republican leader Jeb Bradley that, you know, the Senate probably isn't going to pass a gas tax. And it was unclear from the speech whether Hassan was endorsing it or just saying, well, let's work together on this. And she did a lot of that, where she would say, this is really, you know, I praise you for doing this, but I'm not sure I'm you know, I'm there yet, kind of was my takeaway from it.
Republican Party leader Jennifer Horne said that Hassan used this speech to, I'm quoting here, lay the groundwork for her support of a disastrous gas tax increase. Horne said a gas tax hike during tough economic times will punish working families, hurt small businesses, and kill jobs. So did she use this speech to promote a gas tax, or did she just say, hey, thanks, Senator Rausch, for working on this? You can interpret it a number of ways, Jeff.
The gas tax is really kind of complicated. Last night I was at the Greater Manchester Chamber of Commerce annual dinner, and I talked to a lot of people there, and there are a lot of concerns in the business community in particular about the infrastructure. So that's really on the radar screen of a lot of the people who these senators and talk to. But as we know from last year, the reason the gas tax didn't go anywhere, the House passed one, but the Senate wouldn't go for it, because the Senate insists that we need to have casino to pay for, and that'll pay for the roads.
Right,
and
that
everything.
Was the impasse. The House wanted a gas tax, the Senate wanted a casino.
And I think that we're setting ourselves up again this year, as Norma said, that it's probably going to be a vote on the casino again. And so I could see that's why the Senate's going to just say, well, no, we want to have this casino here, not a gas tax. But the point is that the gas tax has been the same since 1991, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's still you hear people saying, well, that's just ridiculous, because, you know, my car's getting twice as good gas mileage and was paying the same amount. I think the 4 cents might actually be some kind of thing where you never know. You never know who might in the Senate might be listening.
All right. Well, coming up in just a moment, we'll talk about another big speech this week in New Hampshire. UNH President Mark Huddleston gave his State of the University speech this week. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a moment. We'll also talk about a bill in the legislature to increase the speed limit on two New Hampshire highways, including Interstate 89. We'll get your thoughts on that. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. More of the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. Make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match their employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. More on the New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange, and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, it's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather, partly to mostly sunny for today. We'll have high temperatures in the 20s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank. Banking solutions customized to your business. Information available at centrixbank.com. And Palace Theater in Manchester presenting Divas Through the Decades, celebrating divas of our time from Etta James to Madonna, February 14th to March 1st. Tickets at palacetheater.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're covering some of the stories that made headlines this week, including Governor Hassan's State of the State address. In just a minute, we'll talk about Mark Huddleston's State of the University address at UNH, and also look at a bill to raise the speed limit on Interstate 89. By the way, what do you think of that idea? Since people are already driving faster than the limit, should the speed limit on Interstate 89 be increased as it was for a segment of I-93 recently? You can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests for this week's roundup are Jeff Feingold with New Hampshire Business Review, Norma Love with the Associated Press, and Amory Timmons for the Concord Monitor. And all of you, let's tackle that speed limit bill first of all. Norma Love, just remind us where the speed limit was increased recently here in New Hampshire on Interstate 93.
In January 1st, the speed limit was increased on Interstate 93 to 70 miles an hour from a mile marker in Canterbury all the way up except for through Franconia Notch. And this has been a push by a Manchester Republican, Steve Valancourt. He tried last year to get the speed limit raised on 89 and elsewhere in the state. But the Transportation Committee disagreed with him about the ability of the roads to handle that kind of an increase. They felt that the road, that 93 was fairly straight, that it was a well-made road, that it could handle the increase in the speed limit. But that 89, there are crosswinds, that it's curvier, that it's not as safe for higher speeds, and that if people thought the speed limit was 70, then they'd go 80 or 85 or whatever.
That's human nature, isn't it?
That's human nature. So it's kind of the chicken and the egg, because Representative Valancourt says, well, they're already going that, so we should make the speed limit higher. Well, then the other side will say, yeah, but if we make the speed limit higher, then people will go even faster.
They'll go 90.
Right.
So, Anne-Marie Timmons, what do you think is going to happen with this? It sounds like it's a little different from the 93 conversation.
I think we'll have the same kind of conversation we had. Representative Valancourt's very animated and dramatic in his testimony on the floor. It'll be an interesting and entertaining debate. And I think they'll hesitate to go up on those other roads right now. We haven't really seen enough on 93 so far.
It's still so new. Jeff?
Yeah, actually, I've been driving 89 to work for 30 years.
Right, because you live in New London.
I live in New London.
In Manchester.
And I'll tell you, I know that the default speed limit is 73 miles an hour. I've done a scientific survey of this. So if you go to 70, it'll be, 78 miles an hour or something like that. But it is a different kind of road, and it's definitely not the kind where I've seen a lot of, over the years, rollovers and accidents, and not just in this ice, but just people driving and not navigating the curves the right way. But the other thing is that it's an issue that I remember from growing up during the oil crisis, when we lowered the speed limit to 55, and the argument was that lower speed limit mean better energy consumption.
You save gas.
So I don't understand the argument of raising the speed limit if that means we're going to be wasting more gas. Unless, of course, maybe it helps the gas tax. I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll be following up on this in later Friday New Hampshire News Roundups. If you want to join us now on our New Hampshire News Roundup, the number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Jeff, back to you. UNH President Mark Huddleston gave his State of the University speech this week. And in addition to touting new schools opening, the Rudman Center for Public Policy, there's a new marine science school. He highlighted very high-profile work by UNH folk, including the math lecturer Tom Zhang, who solved the twin prime conjecture. That was huge international news.
Hasn't been a guest on the
last year. Not yet. What else stood out from this speech for you, Jeff?
The main thing that stood out to me was that he gave kind of a picture of a maybe it was more like a plea to remember this traditional education in classrooms and buildings, and he kind of disparaging about this whole idea of going online and having, what do you say, a call center to be your classroom or whatever.
So that everybody could get Walmart prices for their education.
Because education is just, the cost of education is crazy. It's a neck and neck between that and healthcare in terms of what's out of control. But his argument was that, they need to have more buildings. They need to, in order to bring more students to come to the campus. But the interesting thing to me is that this is the same UNH that has, gone to look for money every year. And just a week or so ago, they unveiled a plan for like his $25 million
athletic facility
that I know has not gotten the greatest reception among people, many people in politics, many lawmakers. And it was kind of an interesting discussion that he's setting up on what exactly does UNH need. Does it need it? Does it need this athletic facility? Does it? All that kind of.
Norma, do you want to jump in there, and then Anne-Marie?
Well, I think that the argument about the money, I think that for the football stadium, they're saying, well, we're going to borrow, we're going to use, we're going to raise the money. And they're defending that. At the same time, I think you'll find people in the State House who worked very hard to get them some of the money back that was cut in the last session, saying, hey, wait a minute, what are your priorities? And I think it's a legitimate debate, especially since he's arguing that people should come to buildings, but if you don't maintain the buildings and they start crumbling, why would students want to come to those buildings? So it's a whole debate about what are your priorities? Are your priorities a football stadium or to have the state-of-the-art science lab?
And it's tricky because, again, people walk around campus and they say, oh, that looks nice. So he's making the argument that the facilities do help attract students. But the question is, which facilities? Is that what you're saying,
Norma? I'm saying not only which facilities, but you have to have if they want FaceTime, and I think that's a critical element of education. I think we've gotten too much into this, as Jeff was saying, call in or by computer or online. I mean, FaceTime interaction is extremely important. And you have to attract the kind of students that are going to help you keep your university viable. You've got to have the buildings. You also probably need the football team.
But you could also argue that bringing more students in by having tuition controlled where it's not going up every year by beyond the rate of inflation, that also could bring in more students.
So, all right. And Anne-Marie, your thoughts there on Huddleston's speech.
As a UNH alum, I've been getting the fundraising calls almost every single night at my house. And
wow.
It's hard. It's very frequent. And it's hard. $25 million of this stadium is going to be raised in private donations. The numbers I looked at, about 750 students are going to the stadium now for 7,000 seats or something. I think this plan has put UNH's supporters in the State House in a difficult position, as Norma said.
Again, the number for you to join us here in the Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Here's an email from Richard in Chester. He says, I applaud the governor's speech, with the exception of her contradictory arguments on two initiatives. On the one hand, she supports expanded gambling, and on the other, she opposes marijuana legalization. Her rationale in favor of casino gambling is nearly the same as her arguments against cannabis. Richard says, for example, both activities have been and will continue to be widely practiced. Both could generate revenue, and people will continue to indulge in these somewhere, whether legal or not. Richard concludes by saying, in my view, government should stop trying to prohibit these personal choice decisions. Government should not encourage either practice, but rather should regulate and tax them just as it does other potentially harmful activities. You know, I got an email yesterday on the program as we were looking ahead to the governor's speech, Anne-Marie. Someone else also talked about casinos and cannabis. What do you think about this email, kind of putting these two activities that some might find acceptable and some might find unsavory together?
I understand that point of view. I think what the governor is saying is we are going to get casinos in Massachusetts soon, and we are going to lose potential revenue to Massachusetts for New Hampshire people who go to gamble there, but we're going to inherit and keep the problems that come from gambling, the addiction problems. So we're going to see the problems, we're not going to benefit from the revenue. And I think that's the argument. Whereas legalization is not coming to Massachusetts for marijuana. It's not the same kind of border issue.
But it might be coming to Vermont or Maine. You never know. And then, you know, then you have the same issue. And also, if you notice over the last several weeks, if not months, the many supporters of legalization of marijuana have used that revenue argument, saying, you know, New Hampshire could make a chunk of money from having legalized marijuana, and that's always a good an argument to be made in the State House when you say there's money involved with this. So,
Norma?
It depends on how far back you want to step, because you could step all the way back and say all these activities that are bad for us, everything from all the alcohol that the state sells to eating cheeseburgers every day. I mean, how far back does the state, what do we want to tax, what do we want to regulate? At this point, I think, you know, marijuana is still illegal federally. We have made it a legal drug for medical reasons only, and that hasn't even gotten off the ground, and nobody knows how it's going to work. I mean, they don't even have a way to handle the money in the states that do have marijuana legally through the banking system because it's a federal crime. So there are issues with this that are not the same as with having a casino in your state.
Let's take some calls if we could. Thanks for that email. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And the phone number, 1-800-892-6477. 892-6477. Roger's calling from Manchester. Hi, Roger. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I think we should increase the gasoline tax over 3 years like we were going to in the last legislature. I think of my own home heating oil that went up 75 cents in 2 months. And the gasoline I've seen go up 19 cents in a month at times. The oil companies, you know, go up in their profit and down, whereas the taxes for the infrastructure would help us all.
Okay.
So that's my only comment.
Roger, thank you for calling in, and normal love to you, I think, without saying, you know, whether you think it should or shouldn't. That's not your role. What do you think will happen with this bill from Senator Jim Rausch for a 4-cent increase and then tying the gas tax to the inflation rate after that?
I think it's going to have it's really unclear because there are a lot of Democrats in the Senate who supported gambling, and we had a vote in the Senate yesterday to take the latest Senate gambling bill, and they tabled it without debating it, and they didn't have a roll call. So you don't know where people are on it. I think that gambling would pass the Senate. I don't know about a gas tax. And I think he's right. It's a commodity, and all commodities are done on a far different basis than here's a penny gas tax increase, your gas is going to go up. And I think the people who have cried that are wrong. I mean, it is simply a commodity. Now, if you raise the gas tax, you know, a dollar, sure, it probably would have an impact.
Okay, well, thank you for that call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And in just a minute, we'd love to get your thoughts on some of the polling that's been done recently. In Democratic politics, a recent UNH poll shows some worrying news for New Hampshire's congresswomen. We'll talk about that in just a minute, and you can join us. Here's an email, though, that I want to share with you. This is from Chris in Durham. He says, as an undergrad at UNH, I paid $4,000 over 4 years for the athletics program. Close to half of the athletics, $25 million budget, is funded by students. That money goes to athletic scholarships as well as to the staff building, etc. Chris says, why should the state and students be funding this excessively expensive program and paying for other students when so many other great programs are being cut? Chris, thank you for that email. And Jeff, you know, this is some of the tension we're going to hear as this goes forward.
And, you know, it's something that's going on nationally, too. It's a debate on the role that athletics plays in higher education, because it is, in many cases, it's a revenue generator for the big schools. But there are other sports that are just that don't get the same attention. And
other sports and other programs.
And other programs.
Absolutely. And then the philosophy department.
And then in terms of academic programs, you know, we've had—
They dropped it.
Drop baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know down at Franklin Pierce and Ringe, they're cutting several programs because they've had issues involving cost. And that's the same kind of thing that happens at UNH and everywhere else.
And Marie, I wanted to follow up with you on a big, big story earlier this week in New Hampshire, an update on the longstanding investigation of Monsignor Edward Arsenault, former chancellor for the Manchester Catholic Diocese. He moved to Maryland to take another job there a few years ago. This was a big, big story. What were the charges against Father Arsenault?
Father Arsenault has been charged with several counts of theft by unauthorized taking, all felonies. They allege that he was stealing money from the diocese, from Catholic Medical Center, where he was a consultant, and from the estate of another priest over between 2005 and 2013. We don't know the dollar amounts yet, but what we do know is that he has pleaded guilty. He has agreed to plead guilty and serve 4 years in prison. So that was
here in New Hampshire,
In New Hampshire, right? Yes. And that's covering courts as long as I have, agreeing to serve 4 years in prison suggests a significant amount of money. We won't know the amount of money until his sentencing on April 23rd. No details have come out. And what's interesting about Father Edward Arsenault is during the clergy abuse scandal, he was the public face. He was the man in charge of this. And the people who followed that, I covered that at the time, this is not someone who built up a lot of goodwill with the lay people and the people who were trying to follow this. He was someone who ran that operation with not a lot of charm, not a lot of patience for people who ask questions. And so sometimes in these situations, you'll see someone get in a situation like this, and there's a lot of public sympathy. Oh, sort of understand how this happened. But his behavior during the clergy abuse scandal when he was handling that is just, it was so, he had so much confidence and some would say arrogance in how he treated people, that to have this come out now is just especially shocking, I think.
I found it shocking just because I remember he was such a big official. He came on our program many times mm-hmm. during the sex abuse scandal. To think of him serving 4 years in New Hampshire State Prison is just, that just kind of makes your head move around, doesn't it?
It does, yes. There's an, he will be joining, I believe there's still another priest at the New Hampshire State Prison, so they will be meeting up there again.
Okay. All right. Well, again, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in the Exchange, and you can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Join us in some of the stories we've been covering this hour. And a little bit later on, we'll be talking about some New Hampshire Olympians who are in Sochi getting ready for the big opening ceremonies tonight. But before we get to that, Jeff Feingold, there's an Olympic summit, so to speak, of presidential candidates coming to New Hampshire. National conservative leaders are planning what they call a freedom summit in April. This was announced this week. Lots of big names coming to the Granite State.
It's obviously we're getting to the presidential time, and I know Dean's not here, but he'd be really excited about this one. There's going to be, you know, the big names. There's going to be like Rand Paul is coming, and apparently Mike Huckabee, who I'm not sure if he is running or not, but Rand Paul obviously has his eyes set on at least very seriously considering running for president. Newt Gingrich, which is interesting because you haven't heard his name out, but, you know, I think Newt comes when there's cameras. And the same, of course, for one of the other ones is Donald Trump.
He was just here recently.
He's getting a return visit from the Donald, and this is the time when he's sort of toys with running for president. He's done this before, and gets the attention and the ratings go for a show if it's still on the air. I'm not sure about that.
You know, Jeff.
But there'll be other conservatives as well besides like Mike Lee from Utah, who delivered the Tea Party response to the State of the Union address.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's being put on by Americans for Prosperity, which is the organization that's funded by the Koch brothers. And another name that many people would know is Citizens United. And that's, you know, involved in that case that the Supreme Court allowed, you know, basically free-flowing money. And it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what kind of attention it gets, which I'm sure it will get attention, and, you know, both positive and negative.
Sure, there's some big names. And maybe, Jeff, after the break, we can talk about what this says in terms of the significance of the New Hampshire primary, first in the nation. Some have said that it's not as important as it was, but these big names coming might suggest otherwise. We'll get your thoughts on that in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning. It's 9:39.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The Farm Bill passes Congress after a 2-year standoff. CVS says it will stop selling tobacco products this fall. Then the Winter Olympics begin in Sochi. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Jumpin' Jay's Fish Cafe in Portsmouth, a seafood restaurant featuring fresh fish from local fishermen and catches from around the world. Menu and reservations at jumpinjays.com. And Goodwill Industries of Northern New England, seeking solutions at work and creating sustainable communities where nothing goes to waste, not a shirt, not a shoe, not a person. GoodwillNNE.org. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan joins us to look back at her State of the State address and also look ahead to her hopes for the second year of her administration. Send us your questions for the governor before the program, if you'd like, by email, Facebook, and be sure to join us Monday morning live at 9. Today, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and you can join us now by calling 1-800-892-6477. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking about New Hampshire Olympians in Sochi, Russia. 1-800-892-6477 is the number to join us. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Jeff Feingold, I did want to finish up, but just a couple political headlines with you. So you were talking about these big, big name Republicans who are coming to New Hampshire this spring. What does this say, Jeff, about the significance of New Hampshire's first in the nation presidential primary?
It says that it's still significant. I mean, it's you know, people are coming here and they obviously expect that New Hampshire will be the first in the nation primary again in 2016. And I think it's kind of interesting that they're coming so early for a big event like this. This is April. This is a long time off from any even actual real campaign with voters who are paying attention. But I think what's going on now is that it's a wide open Republican presidential field, and it's just something that they're trying to get as much attention and advantage as they can. And
water also, those grassroots early.
And also the troubles that Governor Christie's having down in New Jersey, I think that has also really made the jockeying a little even more interesting in the last few weeks or so.
One more political story I wanted to ask you about, Jeff. In Democratic politics, a recent UNH poll shows some worrying news for New Hampshire's two female members of Congress, Carol Shea Porter and McLean Custer. How does it look for them?
Going by these numbers, it doesn't look very good. Particularly for Congresswoman Shea Porter, who is trailing her Joe Frazier, if you're going for the third time up, Frank Ginta, by 6 points right now, if the race were held today.
And, of course, he has a Republican primary.
And he has a Republican primary,
Dan Innes,
and she does have a lead over Dan Innes, who I'm sure does not have the same name recognition as a former congressman of the district. And also, Congresswoman Custer has surprisingly tight races head, you know, in a potential matchup with both of her potential Republican opponents, and according to at least some people, it has a lot to do with how people feel about the Affordable Care Act. But you know, that's all speculation. And as has been said many times, it is very, very early in the whole process, and to make assumptions based on numbers in February, or you know, I just think it's kind of crazy to kind of assume this is how it's going to go.
All right. Well, I want to turn from politics to the Olympics. A lot more fun, in my opinion. Right, still a game. And Sam Evans-Brown is with us. The Winter Olympics official opening ceremonies are tonight. Sam Evans-Brown has been looking at New Hampshire's connection to the Sochi Games. And Sam, thanks for giving us a few minutes today. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
So who are some of the big names from the Granite State in Russia right now?
Well, I'd say our probably, if you're looking for medal contenders, the ones to watch are obviously going to be Bodie Miller, who's been a name for a very long time, and Michaela Schifrin, who is, you know, not strictly speaking a Granite Stater, but has spent a great deal of time here, even though she went to boarding school in Vermont and was born elsewhere. She lived in Lyme for a long time. But those two alpine skiers are names to watch. But also Hannah Kearney, who was born in Norwich, Vermont, but went to school at the Waterville Valley Academy, one of those powerhouse programs that has produced a lot of medal contenders in freestyle skiing. So she's already done her qualifying run in moguls and finished first. So that's another big medal contender. But the other, what I think is going to be really interesting to watch is the slope style competition, which is, of course, a brand new sport. And we have a snowboarder, from Laconia, Chaz Gouldemon. And he's through to the semifinals. He's not into the final yet because, of course, they started it yesterday. But you know, it's a brand new sport. It's wide open. Who knows how he's going to do? And he might make the final.
Yeah, I watched some of that last night. It was really
quite
something.
It was wild, yeah.
Quite something. They are flying pretty high. I have to ask you about Bodie Miller. I was reading some of the pre-Olympic coverage earlier this week, and I said to my husband, Bodie Miller's still going to the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, how many is this for him?
So this is his fifth, and he had some comment where he talked about his, you know, the knees aren't quite there anymore, and you know, the back's kind of a liability, you know, so he sounded kind of like an old man, but he still skis very fast. Again, you know, they had training runs that were timed, and he had the fastest training run, and it's, you know, immediately afterward he said they don't give medals for training runs, so you know, he's got a good point there, but he's fast. He's still fast.
All right, what are you especially going to be watching, Sam?
So anyone who knows me knows that I'm a big cross-country ski nerd. So we have an enormous number of cross-country skiers because we have this powerhouse program in Dartmouth that has, you know, won many national championships. And so they've produced a lot of alpine and Nordic Olympians. And so there are a lot of people with New Hampshire connections who are some of whom are personal friends of mine that I'm going to be watching.
Wow. Okay. Sam Evans-Brown, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Sam Evans Brown. Again, he's our environment and education reporter here at NHPR, but he's also closely watching New Hampshire's connection to the Winter Olympics. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. A couple emails have come in, one from Stefan, again, on the marijuana legalization issue. He says, I voted for Maggie Hassan, a decision which I now regret. Her hypocrisy on the issue of marijuana legalization is astonishing. She has the gall to stand there and tell the state that it sends the wrong message to kids while pushing for a casino. So that's a similar thought to our earlier email, people sort of tying these two issues together. Here's another email from Lee in Nashua. He says, 99% of drivers speed. The F.E. Everett Turnpike in Nashua has a speed limit of 55 miles per hour, but almost everyone goes 60 to 100. It seems many drivers don't care about safety either, speed or actions, e.g. tailgating, phone use. Going faster also increases the amount of gas needed and costs more. Lee says, how about getting people to be safe instead of increasing the possible damage when they hit others, perhaps decreasing the limits to 45 so they only do 65. Wow. Norma Love, what's your thoughts on perhaps Lee's comments on speed, but also he mentions cell phone use and so forth. There's a couple bills in the legislature targeting texting while driving, cell phone use while driving.
Well, texting while driving is illegal in New Hampshire, but we've had a law, the debate over cell phone use has gone on for some years. And to sidestep that, well, you know, you see people reading, you see people putting on their makeup, eating, you know, pouring coffee into their lap, whatever. It's a distracted driving law, but it's not well enforced. So people say, well, if it's holding up your cell phone to your ear, are you more distracted than if you have something in your ear or your car? Most of the cars nowadays have Bluetooth, the newer cars. And the law enforcement will argue that actually it's the conversation that takes you away from being really in tune with what you're doing.
Even if it's hands-free.
Right. And if someone's in the car with you, it's a different kind of conversation than if you're thinking in your head, I'm talking to this person, you're visualizing it, then you're not looking at the road.
Yeah. Jeff, go ahead and then Anne-Marie.
You can see driving. You can tell when people are on the phone. When they're not going with the flow of the traffic, they're just different from the flow because they're doing something else. They're not only driving; they're talking. And I do have to say one other thing: I've seen someone shave while they're driving.
Wow!
And it's before the days of smartphones, so I couldn't take a picture because I could have posted
well, if you took
that
a picture.
Day,
you know, you would have been distracted
exactly.
Yourself. Go ahead, yeah. Anne-Marie.
I wanted to note that I think one thing that we'll see. We've had a couple high-profile cases of people being killed by people admitting they were texting while driving, or it's suspected that they were. And I think, unfortunately, that's how these kinds of habits change. There's tragedy, and that become people learn about that in the news. We write about it. We hear the personal stories, and people begin to realize there's consequences to this kind of behavior.
Yeah, it's, if you kill somebody, that's
see someone weaving, you would assume it was DWI, and now you think, oh, they're probably texting. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that email, Lee. He also, by the way, goes on to say that we should not promote gambling for profit, which increases crime, hurts more than helps people. And again, I want to let Lee and Stefan and the other folks who emailed that, again, Governor Hassan will be here on Monday, so you can join us for that conversation. I'm sure we'll be talking about these issues and a lot more. Let's go back to our callers. Ruth's calling from Canterbury. Hi, Ruth. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I heard in your lineup that you were going to mention New Hampshire Audubon's centennial. And so I just wanted to call in and say, as the centennial coordinator for New Hampshire Audubon, we are so excited to be turning 100 this year. And we have a whole lineup of activities for the public. And starting next Saturday with our 100th birthday bash at the McLean Center in Concord.
So next Saturday, not tomorrow, but next Saturday.
That's correct, the 15th, and that'll run from 10 to 3 with ongoing activities throughout the day. All the information about it is on our website. And that's just one of many things. We have a whole lineup of activities, pretty much something going on every month as we celebrate 100 years of conservation.
And this is 100 years of New Hampshire Audubon, not the Audubon Society itself, Ruth.
That's correct. National Audubon is a separate organization, and we are independent from that. So this is 100 years right within New Hampshire. In 1914, a group of folks got together down in Nashua and decided they wanted to help protect birds because at that time a lot of birds were being killed to decorate ladies' hats. And so we're actually going to have a little puppet show at the birthday bash to give a little insight into the history of the organization and why it got started.
All right. Well, happy birthday, Ruth.
Well, thanks a lot. Hope to see okay. folks at our party.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
I did want to follow up on one more quick story, Norma Love, that you've helped us out with. The Fred Fuller Oil Company ended up paying a fine this week to the state.
Well, I don't know if you'd call it a fine, but when they were...
Reimbursement.
When they had trouble with their phone lines and I guess 1,800 some odd customers couldn't get through, they called this hotline that Maggie Hassan and the state set up. And the state said there's no way we can force Fred Fuller to pay for the time and costs. But they sent them a letter saying this is what it cost us. And it was about $21,000. And I think Fred Fuller Oil decided that, you know, its public relations is pretty well damaged right now. Agreed to pay not only that, but also to set up a fund to take complaints from people that said, hey, you know, when I couldn't get through to you and I had to fill my tank, I paid more than I would have because you and I had an agreement, and they're going to try and resolve some of that.
And full disclosure, Norma, you were a Fred Fuller pre-buy customer.
Right, and our oil was delivered on time.
Good to know you weren't cold.
I mean, it was during this whole thing, but as it dropped down, I thought, well, am I going to have to call the hotline? But we did not. It came, and they filled the tank.
Well, and here's an email that came in from Amy in Harrisville, who says, please acknowledge the passing of Bob McQuillan, who, along with Ralph Page and many others, was instrumental in advancing the resurgence of traditional folk music and dance in New England. If you've ever been to a contra dance or heard traditional music played, you owe a debt to Bob. He passed away in Peterborough at the age of 90. And Amy, yes, I did want to acknowledge that. Here's just a little bit more about Bob McQuillan from the Monadnock Ledger transcript. He was awarded a National Heritage Fellowship by the National Endowment for the Arts in 2002, recognizing him for having a central position in New England traditional dance music scene for more than 50 years. He composed more than 1,300 dance tunes, many of which he named after his friends, both old and new. Here's something that I didn't know, though, folks. McQuillan also taught industrial arts for many years at Peterborough High School and later at Conval, where he was known as Mr. Mac. So, Amy, I'm so glad for that email, and I did want to acknowledge Bob McQuillan. Absolutely. Kind of interesting, Jeff Feingold, that it comes shortly after the death of Pete Seeger.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and about the same age, actually. These guys live into the 90s because, you know, music must keep them going.
Right.
And it's really amazing.
Well, I want to let everybody know that next week on The Exchange, we're going to start the week on Monday with a conversation with Governor Hassan, covering a lot of the stuff that we've talked about today, the State of the State address, and also talking about, you know, the casino gambling and the marijuana legalization and some of the other issues that have raised. Other topics we're going to cover next week include the alarming rise in heroin use in the Granite State in northern New England, something you mentioned earlier, Emery Timmons. Norma Love, what are you going to be tracking next week? There's a lot going on.
Well, we only heard about the framework for the Medicaid expansion, which the Senate Republicans don't want to call expansion. But they're supposedly going to have the bill next week. And, you know, as they say, devil's in the details. I've had agreements fall apart over, you know, a couple of words. So we'll see if when the bill comes out next week, hopefully they already have it in draft before they announced it yesterday, or we may not see the bill. I think reading that bill will kind of give us an idea what kind of deadlines we're talking about, because this program, I asked Senator Morris yesterday, you're saying basically if I'm a low-income person and I need help, I've got, under this framework, I've got 3 years and then done, unless the next legislature agrees to go farther. So I guess there are those who would say 3 years is better than none.
Yeah. So you're saying, despite all the high-profile, happy announcements yesterday on both sides, that this could still fall apart? Is that what you're saying, Norma?
I'm saying that it has to go through the Senate. It has to go through the House. The governor has to sign it. And then the federal government has to say, okay, we'll let you do it, and we'll give you money for this. And that's a lot of hurdles. They need some waivers, which And one of the waivers they need isn't specifically tied to this expansion. It's tied to getting money for other kinds of matching programs that the state does through the hospitals, through mental health. They call it an 1115B waiver.
All right. Well, something we'll be following a lot, I'm sure. Jeff Feingold, how about you?
Well, I know we're going to spend some time looking at what the governor's proposals in her State of the State regarding business and education, because that's obviously a big issue that's important for our readers in particular. I'm really interested in knowing what this gold standard program is going to be in terms of easing the regulatory burden on businesses, because that's something that I know has been of interest to many businesses about. They complain about regulations, but I'm not, you know, it's not always clear what regulations they're complaining about, and it's not clear what regulations she's talking about. I know there's a program that the EPA has that's similar to this, where if you're on good behavior, you know, we'll let you go on some stuff. And I think it's probably going to be modeled somewhat after or something like that. But we'll have to find out.
All right. Well, and Anne-Marie, I know you won't be covering any stories next week because you are leaving. Very warm wishes from all of us here for the next phase of your career. Your last day at the Concord Monitor is today. I got a tweet earlier from New Hampshire GOP Senate. They say departing Concord Monitor news reporter Anne-Marie Timmons is on the Exchange Week in Review right now, wishing her the best. So good luck. Where are you going?
I am going to Plymouth State to get a master's in education for school counseling. It was a difficult decision. I've been at the Monitor for 21 years. I never wanted to be a reporter anywhere else, but the newspaper industry has changed, and I'm going to try something new.
Well,
congratulations.
Congratulations, and there's some lucky
Mazel
kids.
Tough.
It's been a great, great career and a great place to be a newspaper reporter.
All right. Well, we'll miss you, Anne-Marie. Best of luck to
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to close out again with some music from Bob McQuillan, who, as we said, longtime traditional folk and contra music icon, passed away this week. Here's some music from Bob McQuillan. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and Monday in The Exchange, we sit down with New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan. Fresh off her State of the State address, we'll talk with the governor about some of the major themes she raised, from a new bipartisan deal on Medicaid expansion to a call for a higher minimum wage to her continued push for casino gambling as a revenue source. Send us your questions and comments for Governor Hassan by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange, Monday morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show and the Domestic Hour of the Friday News Roundup next at 10 on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from UR members and from UNH Manchester, offering a bachelor's degree in computer science and entrepreneurship. More information online at manchester.unh.edu. And Centrix Bank, see beyond with Centrix Bank, providing complete business banking services to small to medium-sized businesses in New Hampshire. Information at centrixbank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org. It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. The January unemployment rate of 6.6% is the lowest in 5 years. But analysts are disappointed with the creation of just 113,000 jobs. President Obama today signs a farm bill that trims food stamps.